When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson. Obviously, you know, this is a audio podcast. There's no video component. But I hear rumors that right before we started, Lucas basically took all of his clothes off and just started going crazy.
What?
Are these rumors true?
I'm very confused where you're going with this bit. Those rumors are not true. I'll also say for the podcast listeners, we're doing you a favor by not having any video component to this show.
I don't know. I just turned on Twitter and like the first thing that popped up was you tweeted about,
Antonio
Brown.
Yes. Clearly, I was playing a game of sports ball and then halfway through decided to take off my shirt, throw it out the window, and leave my apartment for reasons that I can't really explain.
Well, that type of behavior will not be tolerated on this podcast.
The funny thing is, it's totally going to be tolerated in the NFL, along with all the money.
Oh, they already cut him.
He's done.
They already cut him, so.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind then.
That was quick.
Arian said it after the game, like in the post-game press conference. He was like, yeah, he's cut.
Good on the Bucks then.
He was like, that was basically it. Like, I don't really know what happened. Because he was like, hey, do you want to go win the game? And Antonio Brown was like, no. And he was like, what? Yeah. Like, he was trying to sub him in. And Antonio Brown was like, nah, I'm out. And Arian was like, huh? Okay, I guess. And then he left.
We're not a football podcast for the most part, and I also don't feel like having a half-hour-long discussion about the craziness of that was the wrong word choice there. The highly unusual nature of Antonio Brown's career over the last 5 years, but if you're out here caping for Antonio Brown, go find something better to do.
Yeah.
Like, does the dude have some mental health issues? Yeah, probably. He's also done some really terrible, awful things and always shown zero remorse for them. So I have no sympathy for the guy. Mm. Bye-bye.
Well, if any of you guys do not want a podcast anymore, there's easier things. You don't need to go through any craziness like that. You can just let me know and it'll all be good. So no worries. All right, so all of that aside now, promote, extend, trade. And we just started the new year. It's 2022 now. And a couple of pretty good guys are celebrating their birthdays today. So who are we going to promote, extend, or trade? First, we have peak Edgar Martinez. His best season, 1995, he hit 356, 479, 628 with 29 homers. Next we have peak David Cone, who was born the same year as Edgar Martinez and the same date, obviously. And his best season, I'm going to say 1988, he posted a 2.22 ERA with 80 walks and 213 strikeouts in 231.1 innings. And last but not least, the youngest guy of the bunch, peak Fernando Tatis Jr., who had his best season this past season, and he hit 282, 364, 611 with 42 homers.
Damn. So this is just like what player would we take?
Yeah, you have a team. It's a good team, so don't worry. And, you know, you can promote one of these guys to your team. You can extend the other dude, and the other one has to get traded.
I'm trading Cohn because he was a Yankee.
I'd probably trade Cohn too, just because I'd want the everyday, like the 162 player, like game player. You just will impact the game more. That's tough.
Edgar, I feel like, is one of the poster children. Would that be the correct plural there? Let's go with poster children.
I like poster children, so yeah.
For like careers that say early Saber people were arguing were much better than everyone realized. And for that reason, I have a soft spot for Edgar Martinez. Dude was also like really fucking good. So I'm going to extend Martinez, and I guess I'm promoting Tatis.
Yeah.
Also, Tatis has done it for like two seasons. Let's be real.
Him and Big Poppy are like the DHs.
Mm-hmm.
Like they defined a position. Whether or not you like the position is a different story, but it's a position for half of baseball and soon probably to be all of baseball. And they're like the godfathers of it, and he's one of them.
And it's kind of crazy in retrospect, really. Like, I really didn't start obsessively following baseball until like the mid 2000s, like the 2004 Mets, I guess. Mm-hmm. And Martinez was basically, you know, like late 80s to basically the beginning of 2000s. So he was already retired by the time like I started really getting into baseball. You know, like 1990, late 90s Mets teams. I just kind of followed the Mets, and then, you know, not.
But really. Also, like, we were young at that point.
Right. But it's just crazy to like look at his numbers and be like, how is this guy so underrated? Like, how is the argument, yeah, he was a DH, so who cares about him? Like, the dude, he's like a career insane stat line.
Yeah, like he's one of the best hitters ever. Like,
yeah, didn't hit homers, guy. I mean, that's literally it.
Even like he was just he's definitely criminally underrated. And if he played now, he would be like one of everyone would love him.
Mm.
He's one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just looking. I mean, I every time we talk about anyone on the Mariners in this era, I pull up the career trajectories for a bunch of guys. They were 1 year off of having Edgar Martinez, Alex Rodriguez, and Ichiro Suzuki on the same team.
That's wild.
So I don't think I listed all four there. Edgar Martinez, Alex Rodriguez, Ichiro, and Ken Griffey Jr. all on the same team.
Wild.
They missed that by a year. And they never won anything.
A lot of weirdly good talent flowed through Seattle.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, they had the best team ever.
Yeah.
117 wins, right? Something like that.
16. I don't know, but...
It was like 16 or 17, but still, like... That's going to be hard-pressed to ever get.
You guys are correct. It was 116, which the Cubs also did in before the Mariners. 1906, so who cares?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like, now it's just there's too much talent in the game, really, to win that much.
The 2022 Mets are going to beat that, obviously, but let them have it while they can, I guess.
And that's insane. The Giants and Dodgers are the best teams in baseball last year, and the Dodgers roster was insanely good. The Mariners were 10 wins better than that.
Yeah, and it really is crazy when you think about how good a team that wins 116 games actually is. When you consider, like, wow, if a team wins, like, high 90s, you're like, damn, this is a really good team.
Like, I mean, if your team wins 90, it's a good team.
Yeah. Like, when was the last time the Mets had a team that won more than like 92 games?
Like, if the Mets win 90 games this year, I'm ecstatic. And like that Mariners team beats them by like, you know,
20
like,
games. You 20 congrats, games. You won 90 like, games. You lost the division by 20.
it's crazy how hard that is, and especially with a game like baseball where it's so long and so much shit could go bad, just out of your control.
2006, the Mets won 97. That's
and that team was like a juggernaut. Like they beat the shit out of everyone for the entire year.
Well, then, and then all their pitchers got hurt, and we know what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Before we move on, who is in the pitching staff of that 2001 Mariners team?
I will.
Jamie Moyer.
Jamie Moyer, yeah.
Oh, my God, right.
That's all I know.
A 33-year-old Jamie Moyer.
No. See, he was still he was old then. let's see.
I mean, he might have been old then.
One, Seattle.
He's perpetually old.
Oh, another good old name. Freddie Garcia.
Oh, okay.
40 innings of 3.05 ERA ball. Jamie Moyer. Aaron Seal.
Aaron Sealy. He was a Met. Famous Met.
Yeah, I thought he was a Met.
Paul. He was literally 38, Jamie Moyer.
Paul Abbott. Don't know who that is. Let me lower the innings pitched here so I can actually see. Arthur Rhodes. Oh, Joel Pinheiro.
Oh, yeah.
Kazuhiro Sasaki. Jeff Nelson. John Halama. I don't know who that is. Ryan Franklin. Jose Paniguana. I don't know what this dude's name is. Yeah, lots of hitting. I don't know these pitchers.
Remember the Joel Pinheiro sweepstakes in like 2007?
Yes,
good times.
Yeah, man. It was a big deal.
Didn't the Cardinals wind up swindling a dude? Or was it the White Sox who got the better end of that deal? Because Joel Pinheiro went to the Cardinals. Ryan Ludwig went to the Padres, and okay. I'm sorry, Steve. I'm derailing your set.
That's all right.
As usual, but now we have to.
I mean, now we're fixed it, so.
We're remembering some Pacific Northwesterners, so it's fine.
Oh, wait. This was Jake Westbrook, not Joel Pinheiro. I am incorrect.
Oh, wow. Jake Westbrook. I haven't thought about that name in a while.
I know. There's a lot of retro names here.
Yeah, just all those Cardinal, random Cardinal pitchers of the late aughts are kind of amalgamated into one thing in my head. There's Adam Wainwright, there's Chris Carpenter, and then there's the blob of Cardinals pitchers that were better than they should have been.
Jeff Supan. Jeff Supan. Like, he lives in my brain for that reason.
I was obsessed with Jaime Garcia for a couple years.
He was pretty solid when he was healthy.
Yeah, and then he had.
Yeah, he got hurt. Right? He had TOS.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, let's. We actually have some Mets news, however minor it is, but it is actually Mets related. So let's try to transition to that now. And according to Jansen Pujols, who is a journalist that works for a couple of Spanish-speaking newspapers and radios and TV stations. Juan Soto's brother, Elian, he has announced that he has a deal with the Mets and he's going to sign with them in a couple of weeks when the international signing period officially opens on January 15th. And further solidifying these claims are Soto himself, who posted training videos of himself working out and doing baseball activities in Mets gear. So, you know, it's getting some press because obviously when we think of him, we think of Juan Soto. And I think Juan Soto is a solid player, would you guys say? He's okay?
Yeah, right. Pretty fine. Yeah, I take him in the outfield.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, there's not a lot of baseball-related news at all because reasons. But, you know, I think this is kind of a big nothing burger piece of news right now, you know. He's not his brother. And as, you know, Gregory Guerrero or Wilfred Astudillo or my boy Juan Urbina can attest to, being related to someone who's good doesn't automatically mean that you're going to be good. And Soto's not on any industry top prospect lists. You know, Baseball America, they go 35 deep. MLB goes 50 deep. So, you know, obviously there's a long history of guys that get lots of hype and they flame out. And then guys that get like tiny little bonuses and no hype whatsoever and they turned to superstars, but just based on, you know, what we have in the here and now and present, he isn't necessarily a guy that is particularly highly thought of.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's a nice way of putting it, but I mean, we'll see, because there's really...
I think it's safe to say, like, nobody knows anything about him.
Yeah, there's, like, so little information.
Like, what you know about him is he's Juan Soto's brother. I'm like, all right, cool. Sign him, who cares? You know?
We should also, we should, if we're talking about this, bring up the fact that, like, it's kind of gross that this is happening.
Yeah.
14 or 15. If we're hearing about this deal, it's probably been in the works for a while. The international system is fine.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that not supposed to happen?
Yeah, aren't teams supposed to not do this?
I didn't realize he was that young.
He can't sign until, like, sometime next year. Like legally. Literally
it's,
legally.
It's so.
Listen.
And, like, some dude just tweeted it out, and now Juan Soto's brother's on Instagram, like, yeah, let's go Mets.
I'm not saying that this is what happened. I'm not saying that this guy is actually as good as, oh my God, who's the top signing this year? My brain is failing. Oh, okay, I'm forgetting the guy.
I think.
Whatever. I'm not saying that he would be like a top level signing, but a lot of time these guys get like deals early and then teams hide them. So who knows if that's what's going on here. And that's part of the reason why no one knows anything. Like this whole, practice, this whole setup we have with IFAs is patently gross, and I wish it would change, but no one seems to give a shit. No one who matters seems to give a shit, unfortunately.
Yeah, like, we just roll into the things like, oh, the Mets are expected to sign, like, 8 people. Like, they already signed them. Like the deals are already done, and then that whenever date is, because I think they changed the day, like the
international day. It's January 15th.
Like it's different than it used to be. But like then all these deals are going to break. It's like the NBA when free agency starts and at 12:01 a.m.
We totally weren't tampering right before this.
Like everyone knows that all this stuff is illegal and going on illegally, and no one is ever going to stop it because it doesn't benefit anyone to do so.
See,
you know,
at least on the professional side.
But yeah, professionals, who cares?
Yeah, they're A, adults, and B, have recourse to, like, tell their agents are going to say, no, this team sucks, we're not going to deal with them, or go get money elsewhere. These kids can just get absolutely screwed because the Mets or any other team could just say, yeah, we changed our mind. Remember how we hid you for 2 years because we had a deal with you? Yeah, we're not signing that deal. Get fucked.
Yeah, and then that's it. That kid's screwed.
I'm pretty sure we've spoken about it before, but Miguel Sano and the whole idiocy that went on there with the Pirates.
It's honestly just the funniest thing about Soto is that I'm just going to use this as slander that the Mets are going to sign his brother in like 4 years.
Yep.
Like that's all I'm using this for.
Yep.
Like they're just convincing his brother to sign by treating his brother nice. So welcome to the Mets, Juan.
It worked out with Mike Glavine and Tom. So
it's just like when the White Sox signed Yonder Alonso and then signed Manny Machado, right? Remember that?
That worked
because they're brother-in-laws, and you always want to spend more time with your in-laws.
Taps earpiece. I'm being told it did not, in fact.
But no, it's just because he is who he is. Like that's really the only reason why anyone is tweeting about this at all.
Yeah, the international signing period starts. Excuse me. Ugh, I have COVID, so that sucks. But it starts on the 15th, so we'll see how the Mets do. Obviously, we know that Soto is in the mix here. The biggest name that they've been connected to is a guy named Simon Juan. He's a speedy center fielder. From the Dominican Republic. Baseball America ranked him 14, MLB 16. So we'll see who else gets added.
It's theoretically giving him like $2 million, right?
Yeah. If they theoretically sign him.
Yeah, theoretically. It's not, you know.
But yeah, that is the only Mets-related news here. It's been fun.
I went and So it wasn't Joel Piñeiro. I'm looping things back here. But someone did get screwed in that three-team trade because the Indians picked up Corey Kluber for Jake Westbrook.
Damn, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Jake Westbrook went to the Cardinals. Ryan Ludwig went to the Padres. And Corey Kluber and Nick Greenwood went to Cleveland.
Ryan Ludwig is another remember some guy's name.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so if you are listening to the podcast as soon as it comes out on Monday morning, either the top 25 prospect list for 2022 has just started or it's about to start. If you are a real good listener and you are, you know, downloading and listening to us at like 9:30 or 10 o'clock, whenever this usually goes on live, but the top 25 prospect list countdown is starting. And this week, we're just going to go over some of the guys that just missed our individual lists. You know, we all went basically 30 players deep, which became a little bit of a challenge around like 8, 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not the best.
I mean, after that, it's kind of whatever. Like, you could kind of put them in any order, and I would be like, all right.
I'm actually a little disappointed in myself for not doing that as a gimmick. I should have. That would have been a fun
start picking
bit.
Names out of a hat at 11.
Yeah, I should have, like, put every name past 10 into a random number generator and given that to Steve as my list.
Honestly, we would have been like, sure, all right.
I would have sent a concerned DM.
Sir, it's just numbers. Oh, crap, I forgot to put the name.
Now, what we should actually know, we could have done like a series of real rankings and a series of fake rankings. Determine the difference. You can't.
Yeah. But, yeah, we went 30 deep because, you know, towards the end, there's a lot of difference of opinion. I don't know. That's not even the way of putting it because you're squibbling at that point, but there's a lot of different names towards the bottom, so you know, you got to go a little extra. So we have basically we all have our 26th top prospect, who obviously did not make the master list but is on our own individual list, so we're going to talk about those guys this week. Does anyone want to volunteer to talk about their guy first?
I have, like, the least interesting one. I should not lead off this segment.
All right, well, then Lucas will not.
I'll go. Yeah.
All right.
So my 26th man is Robert Dominguez, a right-handed pitcher, 20-year-old from Venezuela. The Mets signed him in 2019, and he was a little older than your typical IFA signing. He was 17, I believe, but basically 18. Like less than a month to go until he turned 18 when he signed, because he was kind of a late bloomer and grew a bunch after turning 16. So he's one of, like, I don't know, maybe like three or four pitchers in the system who can consistently reach the high 90s with their fastball. I think it's like him, Mikel Otañez, and Deoca. But yeah, that's kind of been the main thing that everybody was talking about with Dominguez, is that he really has a very, hard fastball, at a young age. In addition to that, he has a curveball that shows promise and is starting to learn to change up like every pitcher his age is. He made his professional debut this year, because obviously there was no 2020 season. And he spent the entire season in the complex, in the FCL Mets, and generally struggled with his command. He pitched in 10 games, 12 innings, 10 strikeouts, 9 walks, with an 8.25 ERA. So not great.
No.
Yeah, not what you want. usually want more of a separation between your strikeouts and your walks. But yeah, that's kind of the story about Dominguez to this point. He gained a lot of buzz for popping radar guns, but he seems to have some of the same issues that hard-throwing Mets prospects in the low minors have had in years past. He doesn't really know where it's going, and there isn't really like a standout breaking ball at present.
When was the last time a Mets pitching prospect came to the majors with high end velocity, with the exception of Noah Syndergaard, and was actually good?
Came to the majors with it?
Yeah.
Syndergaard?
Well, not even DeGrom had it.
Like, right, that's my point. Like, DeGrom didn't come to the majors with high end velocity.
I got you.
Thor did, obviously. It was good. But guys,
but that
like,
was like his whole thing, yeah.
Yeah.
His whole thing.
They also, he was like an import.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah, but when did he was kind of young when they got him still, right?
Yeah, they got him when he was like, he was a prep pick.
He was in, I think, full season ball.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah. I think he was in like A, like single A.
Yeah, okay. Barely. Right. Full season ball.
But like,
yeah, no, saying, yeah, no, no.
Like
no,
Victor
no.
Black, velocity, no control. I can't even name that many pitchers who've had that velocity at all.
I don't want to say it's like a trick question, but it's kind of like an impossible question, because that kind of velocity for pitchers is really only in the last 10-15 years. I mean, you can go back to like the mid 2000s and you still have lawyer pitching.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's a good point, Steve, but the rest of the league has, I imagine you go through most teams and they've all developed a couple of these guys, and some more than others.
Most bullpens have like three guys who can.
Yeah. Like the Mets just have not produced any of these high velo even guys who are even semi viable.
Yeah. And that's like a big problem a big problem with their bullpen.
I mean, I can think of like two or three, like Robles would touch the high 90s.
Yeah.
That's
a good shout.
Flexen could like touch, but do they live there? No. And were they good? No.
Did Flexen have that much?
Gerson Batista supposedly.
No, he threw hard. He just threw straight.
No curveball or anything.
Well, it's all of the few names we can come up with in the system who have this high velo only have it and nothing else.
Yeah, and you look at the guys currently in the system, obviously not like Matt Allen, Mikel Otañez throws really hard.
No idea
where it's going. Yeah. No secondaries. most systems have like four or five of these guys. The Mets have like maybe two or three.
And also, like, I think what the point Lucas is trying to make is like they don't develop them further either. Like,
yeah, no, like what you see is what you get.
like all they've done is that throughout their minor league career, and then they get to the majors and, like, sure, you throw 100, but so does everyone. So that's Gerson Batista's getting his shit smoked, like, because he's just not good enough to pitch in the majors, because the Mets haven't developed him in that regard.
The good news for Dominguez is the new regime is taking over like a completely blank slate.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
He's young still, right?
He's 20, but which is still young for like a complex league player. But he's a young 20 because he. Mm-hmm. Missed his first season and really
he
didn't
was an
pitch
old
much
signing
last year.
Too, if I remember.
It was an old signing and then missed his first season and then only pitched in short season. So very, very raw.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he's the first of a more productive, high velocity pitcher pipeline here.
Yep. Dominguez, I think, was the most controversial is not the right word, but there was the most variance in where he was ranked among the four of us. Somebody had him as high as 13. Ken, you obviously had him at 26, and then two people didn't rank him at all. So,
and all that's valid because this damn system.
Yeah.
Like you're gonna hear us say that a lot in the next few weeks, but. Like, goddamn.
Coming into the year, at this point last year, he was being, I don't want to say heralded as the next big thing, because it's not maybe the right amount of hype, but he was basically on all industry top 10 lists.
The Mets were doing some PR work
there. Yeah.
hey guys, look at this, he throws hard.
He was that guy, he would have been starting in full season ball. Probably. No kidding. Yeah. They would have been, you know.
Not that you want to scout the stat line in the complex, but like, I don't feel particularly good about ranking a 20-year-old dude with a 1-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio and an ERA of 9.
Yeah, right.
Now, if he had a 1-to-1 walk to strikeout ratio, but he did not allow a single hit, would that change your perception of him?
Probably. A little bit, but yeah. He's still somehow super hittable.
Yes, yes.
Like, there's an art to being that. Craig Kimbrell does this a bit. Even Oliver Perez did this a bit in his prime. Like, being so wild that, yeah, I'm going to walk 5 guys, but if I don't know where it's going, they don't know where it's going either.
It's like advanced game theory.
This total entropy approach.
That's how I feel watching Oliver Perez.
So part of me thinks, like, he's not all that different than, like, Junior Santos made our list, right?
He did, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think he's all that different from Junior Santos, just, you know, 2 years behind.
I did not rank Junior Santos either.
Interesting.
I do not like Junior Santos.
This has been a recurring
theme over 3 years.
I think they're the same size, too.
Are they? I'll check.
No, Santos is definitely bigger, but
Santos is a big boy.
6'5" to 6'7". They're close. Yes.
I don't think I realized Dominguez was that big. Because I know Junior Santos is like a giant kid. Like,
well, speaking of giant kids, that's a good segue to my guy, I guess, because he is like the opposite of. But the last few names on my list basically came down to a bunch of young IFA guys that played either in the complex leagues in St. Lucie or in the Dominican. And I was split on the bunch of them, but I ultimately went with Robert Colina because I felt like he had the edge over the other guys that were in consideration in terms of the amount of innings that he pitched, the quality of the competition that he faced, and the results. But Colina, he's a Venezuelan right-hander. He was born April 2001, and the Mets signed him on July 2nd, 2017 for $85,000. Spent all of 2018 in the DSL. Then he split 2019 in the DSL and the GCL. And obviously, you know, last season, 2020 didn't happen. So this season he started year with the FCL Mets. He posted a 3.18 ERA in 28.1 innings. Then he got promoted to the St. Lucie Mets mid-August. He posted a 2.70 ERA in 23.1 innings. And all in all, with both Florida teams combined, he posted a 2.96 ERA in 51.2 innings, giving up 48 hits, walking 18, and striking out 59. I don't know how to phrase this right, but there's a major red flag with Colina, and it's really something that you can't do anything about, and it's the fact that he is 5'11" and weighs 175 pounds.
You just put lifts in his shoes, it's fine.
That's true. I wonder if you could pitch with lifts.
That seems like a recipe for destroyed
I'm
ankle
pretty
ligaments.
Sure Herman Munster did it, so.
It must be possible, then.
It must be possible.
That show wasn't a documentary?
But, you know, he was 20 this past season. He's going to be turning 21, you know, in April. So it's unlikely that he undergoes a late growth spurt or anything. And it's not a death sentence to be a shorter pitcher because, obviously, you know, there's the Tim Lincecums, the Johnny Cuetos, Marcus Stroman's. They all exist and they've had success. But Colina doesn't have fastballs like those guys. In terms of velocity or just like movement, his fastball, it sits 87 and 94. It averaged 91 in 2021. Obviously, when it touches 94, you know, that's a fine, perfectly fine number to see for a fastball from a right-hander. Averaging 91, you know, it's below average. And then when he's letting up the gun at 87, you know, that's batting practice right there. So little concerning. It does have a little bit of movement. It averaged 2,350 RPMs, which is a smidge above average, and it has a little sink as a result. But because of the spin axis that it gets, or whatever it is that you want to call it, it's a straight fastball. It has some sink, but not much horizontal movement to it. But in addition to that, regular four-seamer, he could also cut it, he could also sink it, and then he also throws a curveball and a changeup. So that's a pretty solid repertoire for, you know, a 20-year-old pitcher. He overly relies on the fastball right now. He throws it like 60% of the time, and then goes to the curve 20%, cutter 10, and then the sinker and change about 5. So, you know, maybe with some more knowledge under his belt, how to pitch in certain situations better, you know, that can help him overall. The curveball and the changeup, they're both pretty solid pitches, especially when you consider his age. Curveball sits in the mid to high 70s. It's, you know, 73 to 78. It gets a lot of whiffs, and it's his main, you know, swing and miss pitch as a result. Has sweepy break. It's, 1-7. You know, it's a little off kilter, not a true 12-6 or anything like that. And then the changeup, that sits in the mid to high 80s, you know, 86, 87. So that only gives it about 5 miles per hour or so of velocity differential, which is not good. But it does have a high spin rate for a changeup. It averaged 2205 RPM. So it has a lot of downward motion and it gets a lot of weak contact and ground balls and stuff like that as a result. So, you know, the size and the fastball is concerning, but if he could bump that average velocity up from 91 to, you know, 92, 93, which isn't impossible for a young starter, you know, maybe all you have to do is grip the pitch a little differently or change your motion a little bit, you know, it could happen. And you've got a young starter with, you know, okay fastball, average-ish curveball, average-ish changeup. He'll be 21 next year. He'll pitch in some combination of either low A or high A, so that's not a bad place to be. Not a recipe for a top prospect, obviously, but, you know, as a back-end guy, sure. You know, it's a very, very Jose Budo-ish, you know, profile I'm getting.
That's a dude you rank, and it's not like you don't feel great about his major league prospects, but in a system like this, you know?
Right, that's always the thing, in a system like this.
It seems like a bad sitcom. Bad baseball-themed sitcom here, in a system like this.
Yeah, it's like a down-on-his-luck GM takes over a team that, like,
oh, no.
it has, like, no prospects, and the major league team is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, like, he's just sitting in his office with, like, a disheveled suit on, and he's like, in a system like this.
Watching Robert Kalina.
Watching the track man, and he's just...
And it's a good thing no one listens to us, because that's a great idea, and I don't want anyone to steal it. We need to start writing that down, Thomas. We got to start pitching it to Fox, NBC, whoever.
MLB needs content during the lockout.
It's going to go the MLB Network's first TV show.
I smell money. Listen, if SNY could produce like 3 seasons of prospects, I think that they can produce
prospects.
A system like this.
I don't know how they're not bringing back prospects for the lockout.
I think we're all better for it. All right. Well, Thomas, Lucas.
I'll go next. So my pick is someone who probably could be ranked in the top 25, but because of how his season ended, I kind of like, I don't want to say faded off of it, but I just stuck him at the 26th spot to kind of be like, to hedge it a little bit. But mine is Jose Peraza, not Jose Peraza, noted pinch hit legend for the Mets who hit like 170 otherwise, but Jose Peraza, who is a big 6'1", 220-pound infielder, which already should put him on the list because that's an incredible sight to see. Mm. But he plays first, second, third. They signed him out of Venezuela like a few years ago now, like in 2016 for like $200K or something like that. And he's kind of bounced around the lower minors, kind of not really making a name for himself. But I think last year was the year that finally put him on the map. He just turned 21. And in St. Lucie, he hit 274, had a 404 on base percentage, and a 442 slugging. Like, the slugging is a little low for a guy that big, but you don't, a 404 on base percentage is something that kind of opens your eyes no matter where you are in the system. Just getting on base that many times, 4 out of 10 times in a baseball season is insane. Like, that's an eye. Like, that's just a sticky thing that will continue on for him and will really help raise his floor as a prospect, which is where I think his, what could really, if he could get the bat to ball stuff better, because that's where he struggles a little bit. He hit 218, 293, 383 in Brooklyn when he got promoted, which, I mean, obviously it's not good, but also he got promoted midseason, and we've talked about how that could be a struggle for guys, and also he wasn't, like, a top prospect anyway, so it happens. But also, like, I saw him at Brooklyn, and his eye is actually really good. Like, he struggled with spin the one time I saw, like, the times I saw him, or the one time I saw him, because he played the one time. But, like, he struggled with spin, he missed the curveball, and then they just threw him curveballs the rest of the game in the dirt, and he just laid off of them, and he walked, like, twice. Because, like, he was like, all right, you're going to throw me that, I'm just not going to swing at it, because they're balls. Like, he got fooled badly in his first at-bat. And then, like, they attacked him the same way in his next two, and he just didn't bite again. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, he has a pretty good idea of what to do with the plate. So if the rest of it comes together, then I could see him actually being a pretty good hitter. But obviously there's a lot to go into that, and if his bat to ball gets better is a very big ask, but that's still something that's interesting. So that's really why I chose him.
That was a good pitch, Thomas. I'm annoyed at not ranking him now.
Yeah, like, honestly, I could have put him in the 20s and been fine with it, but I put him at 26 just because, like, I don't think the ceiling is really there. Like, I don't think he's going to be a major league player probably, but also, like, if he ends up hitting a little bit, I wouldn't be surprised either. And also, you need organizational guys like that.
Mm-hmm. He's a weird guy to me because...
Yeah, he is. He should hit way more power than he does.
Yeah, exactly. His whole thing when they signed him was, like, this dude grew up on a farm, and he's country strong.
Like, he's a big dude, too.
Like, oh yeah, he's like chunky dude, like, but
like
strong,
like
chunky.
In the box, he's big. Like, he's not like fat or anything, but I'm talking about like he's like a strong dude. You could tell he's strong, like off the field strong, but he just doesn't. It hasn't translated to the game yet.
I'm getting Juan Uribe vibes from what you're describing here.
Yeah, kind of, because he looks like he should have hit more for more power than he did, and he just didn't. And I was like, all right.
It reminds me a bit of late career Johan Ureña, where all of a sudden he just stopped hitting for power, but he, like, walked a ton.
Yeah.
And that's kind of Peroza's different, very different situation and circumstances, but, like, he was a guy that, okay, all the scouting reports are like, yeah, this dude's gonna have, he's got power and he's gonna hit for power, and then all of a sudden, this year, it's like, out of nowhere, you're walking at a 404 OBP. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
But the power wasn't really there.
Yeah, because, like, honestly, no matter where you are, if you have an OBP of 404, I'm going to notice it. Like, that's just, it's too high of a number.
It's quite good.
Yeah. But yeah, and he's like, it's an interesting thing, because if the power comes or the contact comes, then there's something there, because the eye is for real. But that's tough to, that's the biggest part of the game, honestly.
Looking at his numbers here, he hit 7 homers with St. Lucie and 5 with Brooklyn for a total of 12 in 102 games, which is not, like, terrible. It's just a lack of, like, other stuff.
Yeah.
Why didn't I rank this dude? I feel every year there's a dude I just have on an initial list and then accidentally delete and forget to re-add. I feel like that might have been Peroza this year, because he should be higher than some of the guys I have on here, I think.
Yeah, and he's only 21. Like he was younger than the competition. He was about the same age of the competition in St. Lucie, but he was younger than the competition in Brooklyn. And, like, sure, Francisco Alvarez dominated at being younger, but also he's, like, one of the better prospects in the game, like, in the Met system and even in the game
kind
overall.
Of an outlier.
Yeah, you know, like I feel like we should, like, the age stuff is still something you need to take into consideration, especially when you're not talking about the top guys. And Peroza isn't. Mm-hmm. So when you're a year and a half younger than everyone else around you, and you missed a year of full year because of COVID, like, it's going to be a bit of a jump for you. and that's what it was for him, into Brooklyn. So I'm curious. I'm sure he starts in Brooklyn next year just because he didn't hit well in Brooklyn this year, and then that'll be fun to see if he, like, figures it out. You know what I mean? Like, another year there with the same level of competition and the same not moving around, and you know where you are and all that stuff. I'm sure that'll help him too.
Like Dominguez, you ranked Peroza 26. Someone else ranked him 18, and then two others did not rank him at all.
And, like, 18 is symmetry. Yeah.
All right, well, Lucas, we know that you did not rank Dominguez and you did not rank Peroza. So yes. Who did you rank 26?
So I ranked you guys all went with younger IFA-style dudes. I went a different direction, and I picked I ranked the Mets' seventh-round pick from this most recent draft, Kevin Kendall, as the 26th best prospect in the system. So Kendall's college career was not fantastic early on, wasn't great as a freshman or sophomore. And then obviously 2020 came around. He wasn't fantastic then. Didn't even play, actually, because he injured his wrist this after an earlier shoulder injury. So a little bit of an injury history there, which is concerning. He was also bad on the Cape in 2019, which is usually a good barometer for the quality of older college hitting prospects. But whatever, he came back in 2021 after missing the entirety of 2020 and kind of had a breakout. Was walking a lot more, was making a lot more contact, struck out a lot less, and it let his natural athleticism play up. He's a plus, possibly even plus-plus runner. High steal rates in college, has the defensive chops to be plus in terms of range basically anywhere you put him. So he's a plus shortstop range that works at second or third. He was also good in center field when he moved there for Matt McClain since he was at UCLA. So there's a defensive flexibility, speed profile here. He showed up, the Mets sent him to A-ball after he was drafted, and he obviously is old and too experienced for that level and kind of destroyed it. which, I mean, good. I'd rather see him destroy it than not, but it doesn't really mean anything. He hit 327, 421, 451. That's an 872 OPS in just over 100 at-bats. Only one homer, which might be a little bit concerning, but 8 of 10 steals were successful. He walked a decent amount. He didn't strike out too much. So speaking objectively, and I'm certainly not the best swing evaluator out there, I don't love his swing. There's some nice elements to it. Like, it's loose and looks fluid. And he, like I said, he's a good athlete. So you can see you can squint and see something good. But I feel like it's a little loopy and not the most bat speed. And when his foot gets down, his bat's not in the best spot. So there are, as currently constructed, it's not the best. I'm looking at that as both a positive and a negative, though, right? Like, it'd be great if his swing was already good. But if you want to look at it a different way, okay, his offensive production hasn't been awesome or elite or anything, but there are some obvious swing changes you can implement to perhaps improve that are maybe some low-hanging, easily achievable gains by making relatively minor swing tweaks. All of this said, like, I don't see a long-term starter here in almost all likelihood. Like, even if you do make some tweaks, there's probably not a lot of power. He'll yank some out most likely, but this is not a swing or player that's really geared for hard contact that way. It's more a speed and defensive versatility profile, which I still enjoy and enjoy aesthetically and also think has a role on a major league bench. Like, it'd be great if there's like a certain, at least in the way I think about roster construction, there's a certain checklist of skills you want to have on your bench. There's a limited number of spots, but you want to have a plus defender who can play up the middle, and that probably involves both a shortstop and a center fielder. You want speed so that you can run in certain situations. You want bench pop. You want blah, 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 right? There's a whole checklist of things you want to achieve, and you got to cram it onto a limited bench, and a guy who could potentially be plus anywhere you play him defensively and also bring speed is an intriguing solution to that problem to me. So yeah, that's the pitch for Kendall here. Not going to be a future superstar or anything, but I think there's utility role in his future if the swing can be fixed a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you on the swing. It's rough.
Yeah.
But like, there's fun stuff. He was funny in the prospect reports because like, mm-hmm. I feel like every time I would do one, he was like 3-for-4 with 2 steals, and I'm like, dude.
Yep.
Like it was just like, damn. He let off too, and he would be like always on base. And
I don't understand why the Mets sent him to A ball. I mean, it's a post college whatever. It doesn't really matter. Like, I'm not throwing a hissy fit about it, but they really should have sent him to Brooklyn instead.
It was very clearly like good for that level.
It's kind of ironic that we used to complain about the Mets sending their college hitters to Brooklyn, and now we're asking them to be sent to Brooklyn thanks to realignment. I think it's not as bad as that Arizona shortstop prospect who I was into, Colby Woodmansey. It's not that ugly.
Oh wow, I forgot about him.
Great, oh. Colby Woodmansey.
So I
liked him too, Luke.
I liked him because I used to call some of the Cal baseball games on the radio, and I saw him just absolutely demolish 2 balls in a series. I'm like, oh, this dude's good. And then I didn't know what I was doing and didn't realize that he literally doesn't use his bottom half in his swing. Kendall's swing is not that bad. Like, it's fixable. I think they're – and the athleticism – has survived. His arm strength isn't great. Like, I don't want to play him in right field, and the arm might be a little short at third. But the range and speed are there to be an up the middle flex piece, and that's really useful if it pans out.
Especially with the DH, when you don't need like 800 pinch hitters on your bench, like you could have a guy who is an okay hitter at best, or like even a little below average one if he's a really good defender and a good runner. Like, just play him late in games, have him run around and play defense, you know? Like, that's not the best use of a roster spot, but I could see that for like 2-3 weeks or a month if some dude gets hurt. Like,
if he's like your third guy on the bench can post an 80 weighted runs created plus and play plus defense at short and center while being a good pinch runner, I think that's a perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine. And for a 7th round pick with the smaller draft, that's also fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a 7th round pick in the bigger draft is fine too. Like,
yep. He was under 7th round
picks. The 7th round picks, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Good thing they saved all that money.
Let's not. I don't want to be that.
Let's see. Kendall was ranked on 3 of the 4 lists. He was ranked highest at 23, then 1 at 25, and then 26. So everyone is basically kind of in consensus here. Yeah, I feel like he's gonna be like a fun kind of player. I don't know how his career will pan out, but
who was the minor league Rule 5 utility guy they picked? Drew Taylor? Is that the right name there? Something.
Are you talking about this year?
Yeah.
Oh.
He got like 3 at-bats for them. Frick. No, he was picked in last year's minor league Rule 5.
No, but like for the past season, he was in this organization.
Yes.
Ferguson?
Maybe. This is the major league.
Throws.
Point is, the Mets picked like one of these like random bounce around AAA infield types. Like, I could very easily see Kendall becoming that in a couple years.
Yeah. And like, it kind of raises his floor a little bit. Like we have this conversation with Mangum before, where it raises his organizational floor in the minors, where even if he's not a major league piece, like, he'll be around in AAA in 5 years or 4 years or 3 years or whatever, and he'll be able to be an okay player in Syracuse while they have other prospects, because you need that stuff too. Like, your minor league team should be competitive. Like, you don't want to lose all the time like the Mets did. I'm sure the players don't really care. Like, I'm sure they're like, okay, we're here to develop, but also it's just better if you win. Like, that's just how life is.
Right.
The Mets 2020 Rule 5 draft guys in the minor league part, there was Drew Ferguson, who was their first pick. Then they picked Justin Dillon, who is a right-handed pitcher, who I have no recollection of.
0%. I remember that.
Yeah. Then the third round, it was Drew Jackson.
Drew Jackson is the one I'm talking about. Yeah. Yes.
Then the fourth round was Jesus Reyes. And the fifth round was Jose Zaria.
Yeah.
I forgot Drew Jackson actually played in the majors.
Yeah, he got like a couple random at bats. Like, I think that's probably what Kendall could be. And if you have that's like a useful piece to have, so you don't have to pay some new $3 million to be at the end of your bench. And he's optionable. So, cool.
Well, this is scraping the bottom of the barrel here. So all of our future podcasts about all these other prospects that we'll be talking about, nothing but up from here, guys.
I mean, yeah.
Thank God.
Could be worse. We could be
talking about Colby Manzi.
White Sox fans or
Washington still, I think.
Yeah.
It's rough there.
I'm trying to think of the other really bad farms right now. The Rockies?
Arizona, Colorado.
Colorado, man. What a system.
There's just nothing going on there. No matter where you're talking about. Because, at least the Mets have a bad system, but they're willing to give people $100 million to play baseball for them. Like, there's solace in that. The Rockies are like, we won't trade Trevor Story and then also let him walk. And it's like, okay, cool. And John Gray, too. Like,
I didn't even QO Gray.
Yeah, that's different. That's wild. that's just
an effective use of resources. Oy vey. That could be the Will Pondery of the Week, but that happened a while ago. So
yes.
The Will Pondery of the Week for this week, though, goes to Lon Trust, who is the Yankee COO for a decade plus. And he is no stranger to having said dumb things. His crowning achievement probably came in 2016 when he basically said the quiet part out loud and implied that ticket prices in certain areas of Yankee Stadium are high intentionally to keep the riffraff out.
Well, the quote on it is, you can tell he wants to say some he's yes. Fighting it in that quote.
Well, court documents between the Yankees and their former minor league affiliate, the Staten Island Yankees, were made public the other day. And apparently he was not a fan of the pizza rights. And he wrote in an email to their ownership that the temporary name change, which was approved by everybody, so whatever. But it was, quote, an embarrassment to the New York Yankees franchise. Now, this is a franchise, of course, that passed on multiple black hole famers in the 40s and 50s. Is a franchise that, you know, it's the franchise of George Steinbrenner and Billy Martin, of the Bronx Zoo, of Derek Jeter and A-Rod, the 2004 ALCS. So there's a lot of things to be embarrassed about, and they are embarrassed about a temporary short season minor league team name change that was voted on by the people. And it did fucking numbers because Pizza Rat merch sold out like all the time.
Well, it was good. And, that's why.
Yeah. It outsold regular Staten Island Yankees merch like 2 to 5 times. And, you know, I'm a Mets fan, obviously, but the Pizza Rat's hat is my go-to hat. It's just a fucking good hat.
Imagine
and being it's the minors, who cares?
Imagine being a fan of an organization that's this opposed to fun.
Yeah, just like angrily opposed to fun.
I couldn't do it.
Because when the Mets are good, they're fun. Like, those teams are fun. And Citi Field is like a fun place to be at. Like, even when the Yankees
stadium
good,
sucks.
It's kinda, yeah. Like, it. The Yankees have so much history, and, like, I've been there a few times, and there's none of it for show. Like, anywhere. Like, it feels like a cavernous hall.
Yeah, it's it feels like a mausoleum.
Yeah, it's so, like, weird.
Well, clearly you weren't sitting in the right seats then.
There's no defending the current Yankee Stadium. It sucks.
Yeah. Well, that is the Will Pondery of the Week, and this is our podcast. And if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us. Excuse me. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191, and Thomas is at SadMetSeason, S-Z-N. Subscribe to our podcast where you get your podcast from, rate and review, and of course, we thank you for listening, and we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.